A couple of weeks ago, in one of the rare conversations that I actually have with my old man, we were talking about the cloud and the companies that are succeeding in that space. And my father made the statement, I think there's enough room for all of these guys. I hate to say that my old man is wrong, but Pops, I don't know about that. In the course of this newsweek, a couple of the older threads that I've discussed on previous episodes of Sourcecast, specifically Micro Focus's acquisition of HP Software, and Oracle's performance in the cloud space, and most recently in Sourcecast episode 106, when I covered Facebook's issues with fake news and user retention, this week was a perfect storm, and there were new developments in each of those topics, so I decided to update you, my listeners, on those three topics. So this week on Sourcecast, I hate to say I told you so, I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast episode 112. This is going to be a fun episode because I get to use those transitions that I've been doing since episode 100, and they'll actually make more sense because there will be a logical break in the stories because they're three independent stories. Was that too much inside podcast making talk? Do people really care about the transitions that I use? My wife says she likes them. Let's start with Micro Focus. When I started doing this podcast, the disintegration of Hewlett-Packard was a mainstay for the first 40 or so episodes. It really made me sad to see how HP broke apart. They made a series of bad acquisitions, and the cherry on top that set this whole disintegration in motion was their acquisition of Autonomy for $11 billion. Hewlett-Packard totally overpaid. They split into two companies, HP Inc. and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Even though HP Inc. was focused mostly on printers and desktops, they took some of the toxic Autonomy software and eventually sold it off to OpenText. The remaining Autonomy software, along with dozens of other acquisitions that HP made over the years, was bundled together and spun merged over to UK-based company Micro Focus. Like OpenText, Micro Focus has a reputation for buying legacy software, doing minimal upgrades to keep the software relevant, and making a nice, clean profit. At the time of this quote-unquote spin merge, I warned my listeners that this could be a problem for users of that software. Micro Focus has a reputation for auditing their customers. Case in point, AttachMate. Micro Focus purchased AttachMate in 2014 for $1.2 billion, and according to the website 1e.com, they developed a reputation for being extremely aggressive with customers when it comes to software audits. Here's a quote from 1e.com. I've seen AttachMate audit the same customer every 2 years. As I've written before, the audit frequency only changes when AttachMate does not get the financial return that they expected. Alternatively, I've been informed that AttachMate will sometimes wait to audit a customer until the fines and penalties add up to make the pursuit worthwhile. And again, that was an article from 1e.com by Peter Burrick. Micro Focus's business strategy of acquiring these software assets is catching up to them. Last Monday, the company lost more than half of its market value, and they are warning that sales could shrink even more than expected. The company had originally targeted a 2-4% decline in revenue, but now they are expecting a decline of 6-9%. Micro Focus spent $8.8 billion on the HP software, and some of this software was again part of this Autonomy bundle, which HP paid $11 billion for. Micro Focus's bread and butter is low-risk software acquisitions. This HP software had a little bit of English on it, not to get cheeky, so this was clearly out of their safe zone of low-risk software to acquire. And the reason why I brought up their propensity to audit their customers? Eventually, customers get tired of this. So if Micro Focus has a market reputation for auditing their customers, and Micro Focus now is having financial issues, I believe that it's safe to assume that they may expand their auditing practices to this pre-established HP software as well. And if they keep with the AttachMate cycle of every 2 years, I believe that will eventually drive customers away. Another aspect that customers need to take notice of, when a company like OpenText or Micro Focus acquires a bit of technology, they have demonstrated a willingness to upgrade or update the software to an extent. But you typically don't see massive investments and massive improvements on that software. They're just keeping it maintained and avoiding security issues, which is another reason why customers will eventually move away from the software when they have an opportunity. So Micro Focus has a big investment in HPE software, and they also inherited Hewlett-Packard Enterprise leadership with Chris Hsu. But as a result of these earnings, he will be leaving Micro Focus and the CEO role will transition to the Chief Operating Officer, Stephen Murdoch, who was the CEO prior to this software acquisition. Micro Focus is in a tough spot, and I think it would serve them well to focus on their customers during this time. Another company that would do well focusing on customers at the moment is Oracle. Oracle had a rough week as well. Their stock dropped 10% last Tuesday following a third quarter earnings report that was, quote unquote, generally underwhelming. And here's where I think the stock market can get a little overreactionary. Oracle beat Wall Street estimates on earnings per share by 83 cents, but they fell below revenue estimates. But here's where it gets super particular. Oracle reported $9.77 billion in revenue, and the street expected $9.78 billion. So a 10% drop in stock value for a very minor miss, that seems very aggressive. So what are investors reacting to? For the last 2 years, Larry Ellison, anytime he gets a forum, goes on stage or states in the press that Oracle is going to be the number one cloud company in the world. Or he's dismissive of companies like Amazon and saying they're not even true competition. On Oracle's most recent revenue report, they stated that their cloud services earned $1.6 billion for the third quarter. As a point of comparison, Amazon captured $4.11 billion in revenue in that quarter and $17.46 billion in all of 2017. I think that the market is reacting to the fact that Oracle's competitors like Microsoft, Salesforce, and Amazon are growing faster than Oracle, even though they have larger cloud revenues. Oracle's in a tough spot. They are investing money in the cloud. But the problem is, as Oracle invests to catch up in the cloud space, Oracle's competitors like Amazon are driving cloud prices down. So it makes it very hard for a company to get a return on investment, and we're seeing Oracle struggle with that exact fact. Oracle's operating income margins for cloud software as a service is at 65% currently, which is up from 56%, according to Seeking Alpha. However, the margins for cloud platform as a service are at 39%, which is down from 52% from the previous year. There's a ton of competition in the cloud space. It seems like Oracle's method for addressing the gap is to acquire companies like NetSuite. But how many companies can Oracle acquire before they become another example like Hewlett Packard? I enjoyed portraying Oracle as kind of a villain. I like to take some of the quotes that Larry Ellison made to the press and spin it up and make fun of them a little bit. But you have to appreciate Larry. He makes IT news headlines exciting. But as I mentioned, when you go out to the press and you talk trash, you have to deliver. And at the moment, Oracle's not delivering. I fully expect them to have better earning statements next quarter, but as a whole, they have a reputation for being difficult to deal with. And I will cite a somewhat older news story about the former deputy mayor of London wanting to take Oracle down. In 2014, Kit Malthouse was the deputy mayor of London. He was in that post until 2015, and then he became a member of parliament. He gave a speech during London's Technology Week, and he called out Oracle. London was under pressure at the time to reduce costs, and they were undergoing austerity measures, and they tried to reduce their overall subscription rates with Oracle. Oracle knew that the City of London could not get off of their platform and flatly refused to decrease costs. And that prompted Malthouse to make this statement on stage. I want someone in London to crack the Oracle lock that they have. Oracle seems to be the only people who can handle data on that vast volume. He went on to encourage English developers to develop an alternative to Oracle. I don't think they've been particularly successful. But what we are seeing is certain open source database platforms like Postgres take more market share. We're also seeing Amazon's native database platform on their cloud also start to eat into Oracle's market share. Are those database platforms as good as Oracle? Heck no. Oracle is the Cadillac of database. But in some instances, a Honda will do you just fine. And in fact, in the case of Honda, you're going to get 150,000 more miles out of that car. Like Micro Focus, Oracle has to work on their customer reputation. They have to make themselves easier to do business with. They're difficult to contract with, and they have very, very strict software contracts. So as customers are presented with alternatives, and they may be slightly inferior, customers are taking a chance to move away from Oracle. And that is the thing they need to fix. Since we're talking about fixing problems, oh boy, does Facebook have a problem. my news feeds were dominated by Facebook news this week. And I'm not going to rehash the comments and the stories that I presented in Sourcecast episode 106, Facebook, but I didn't talk about this third-party data access issue on that episode. I'm going to start this segment by saying, if you are on any social media platform, especially Facebook, and you think that your data is secured and not being shared, you're out of your mind. Facebook has been pretty transparent about the fact that they are mining your data for all it's worth. And while I don't expect everyday non-techie users to really understand what Facebook is doing with your data, anybody who's been paying attention knows that those APIs, you have to know that your data is leaking all over the place when you're logged into Facebook. So is it surprising in the least bit that this Cambridge Analytics crisis happened? Absolutely not. And if you go out and buy Wired Magazine's most recent publication, Zuckerberg is on the cover, but that publication went out before this news story hit. But I was reading that magazine this week, and there was a very interesting quote. Zuckerberg met with Rupert Murdoch in the last 6 or 7 months, and when Facebook changed their news algorithms, it definitely impacted Murdoch's revenue streams, and he called Zuckerberg out and said, "I can make your life very difficult if you don't fix this." He hasn't fixed the problem for Murdoch. So I'm going to say I think it's a little bit suspicious to see how vicious the news media, the traditional news media, has been on this particular topic. I really do think there's ulterior motives. That being said, I'm all for people deleting Facebook and getting off the platform. I was scrolling through this week to see who I was still connected with, and to repeat what I said in episode 106, I really don't see the need for it. But I do think that it's funny that people who are like, "Oh, I'm going to delete Facebook, and I'm going to switch to Instagram," which Facebook owns, by the way. Just a little heads up, in case you didn't know. After a few days of going silent, Mark Zuckerberg appeared on Lori Segal's CNN show, and he basically said, "Yeah, maybe we should be regulated." Actually, here's the quote. "There is transparency regulation that I would love to see. If you look at how much regulation there is around advertising on TV, it's just not clear why there should be less on the internet. You should have the same level of transparency required. I don't know if the bill is going to pass. I know a couple of senators are working really hard on this, but we're committed and we've actually already started rolling out ad transparency tools that accomplish most of the things that are on the bills people are talking about today. This is an important thing. People should know who is buying the ads they see on Facebook, and you should go to any page and see all the ads that people are running to the different audiences." I hate to keep referencing Sourcecast episode 106, but I called out Facebook for not taking accountability on making decisions about how they run their company. Zuckerberg tried to outsource how fake news is filtered and sorted by using an upvote system similar to Reddit, because they didn't feel like they should make the call on which news sources are considered news. And I said on episode 106 that that was a total cop-out. They're not taking responsibility for their platform. And here is another example where the leadership of Facebook are not taking accountability for their platform, and they're looking for someone else to do it for them. I'm not saying that Facebook shouldn't be regulated. In fact, based on their predatory tactics to get children to use the platform, I absolutely think they should. But the CEO of a massive tech company should not be saying, "Yeah, we should be regulated." That is a total lack of vision. Mark Zuckerberg is coming off like an overwhelmed man-child. I don't love taking shots at Zuckerberg, because honestly, I don't know how I would react or behave or perform in the same situation, but I'm not in that situation. And he has had plenty of opportunities to grow into this role and to handle situations like this. And each time he is presented with a scenario, he has not hit a home run. Maybe you could say he got on first. I can't believe I just stuck with that baseball analogy so long. Lately, I'm of the mindset that if you're on social media, you should have a specific agenda, whether it's connecting with friends and family or promoting some product or business. If you're not on there for a specific reason, you're just wasting your time and you're giving all kinds of information over to someone who's going to make money on it. Don't be the product. Use the product. So there's an update to three news stories that we have covered frequently here on Sourcecast. I think each of them have ramifications for individual users and for corporate users. For corporate software buyers, this is a great time to start to level set some expectations on behavior with your suppliers. For the first time, there are some viable alternatives to certain software products, and that gives you some leverage to address some gripes that you may have had with those companies in the past. For everyday tech users, I'm not going to repeat myself, but just be aware, when you're not paying for something, it's costing you in some other way.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sportscast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sportscast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.